story. It's by the Brothers Grimm, which of course tells you right away, Grimm is a clue to what kind of story it's going to be. There are three brothers, two of whom go out into the world. They're three kings' sons. The older two go out into the world, and they begin to live their life, the story says, completely, foolishly, and wastefully. So by the time they want to come home, they can't. They're out of money, they can't make their way back to the kingdom from which they came. So they're out in the world. The younger son, who the Grimms call Simpleton, he goes out to find his two brothers because he misses them. So he goes out into the world, he finds them, and he says, hey, let me journey with you. I'd really like to be with you. You're my brothers. And they say, oh, God, you can't come with us. You're so young. You're so simple. What do you know? It takes great wisdom to be in this world. We're so much smarter than you. And he insisted, so they took him with. And their journey started. And as they are going out on their first couple of days, they pass an anthill along the way. And the older two brothers say, wouldn't it just be a riot if we, like, kicked this anthill down and watched all the ants scurrying, carrying their eggs away? Wouldn't that just be a riot? And the young brother said, you know what? Don't do that. He said, let these little insects live. He said, I'm going to allow you to come. So another day goes by. They're on their journey, and they pass some ducks on a lake. And the two brothers say, wouldn't it be great if we could just shoot those ducks and then we can eat them for dinner tonight? Let's roast them and eat them. And the youngest brother says, you know what? I'm not going to let you harm them. He says, let these beautiful animals live. Third day comes around and they pass this beehive inside of a hollowed-out tree. And so much honey is just dripping down the tree. And the two older brothers say, wouldn't it be a gas if we, like, lit this on fire, lit the hive on fire to kill off all the bees so we could eat the honey? And the youngest son said, you know what? I'm not going to let you do that. And he said, let these beautiful insects enjoy their life. And they make their way across the land until they arrive one day at a castle. And outside the castle is a stable. And so they go, they poke their heads around, and they see that in the stable there are horses, but all the horses are turned to stone. And they're looking around, they move out of the stables, and they move further into the courtyard. They don't see people anywhere, just these stone horses. But finally they knock on the castle door, and the door is opened by an old gray man, that's the way he's described, old and gray, stone-like, but he is not made of stone. And he brings them into the castle, and sure enough, there are people all over the castle, and all of them, with the exception of this single old man, they're all made of stone. And the old man tells him that there was a spell put on this kingdom. And he feeds the three boys. And he gives them a nice place to rest. He said, meet me here tomorrow morning. They meet him here the next morning. They meet him at this big, long, beautiful table upon which is assembled three tablets. And on these three tablets is described the three tasks that need to be accomplished in order for this spell to be lifted and all of the people who have been turned to stone be brought back to life. And it tells exactly what tasks you need to do. If we, of course, had such tablets, we who come to a place in our life where part of us is shut down, whatever that part might be, turned to stone. And stone is not exactly completely dead. In fairy tales, stone is you're in a place where something is shut down. Something has gotten hard. Life itself has gotten hard. We ourselves get hard. Our heart gets hard after we've closed it down. Finding love gets hard. Finding our work. Continuing to wake up every morning and do what we've done before, but do it with enthusiasm, that gets hard. There's a stony silence, a stony heaviness that happens somewhere in our life. For some of us, it happens in our early 20s. For others, it doesn't happen until middle age. And we begin to drag ourselves through our life as as if life is like a drudge. And man, if we had these three tablets on a beautiful table that said, you know what? To get back to your happiness and joy and wonder, here are the three tasks you have to do. Oh my God, we would pay tremendous amounts of money for that. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for the tablets that tell us what we can do to break the spell of our depression, of our anger, or resentment, or bitterness, or shutdownness. Or for many of us who are just walking around wishing we weren't here because life's too hard, but we don't have that extra courage that it takes to just end it. Man, what we wouldn't do for those tablets. And I am thinking of a woman that I worked with many years ago who went through her life doing exactly what she was supposed to do. She was a therapist, and she'd been a therapist for most all of her life. And she enjoyed it well enough. She made it nice. Living. Isn't that what we all hope for? You make a nice living doing something that you really like to do. And one day, something crazy happened. And mark my words, when something crazy out of the blue happens, you can rest assured life has stepped in. And it has stepped in to have a conversation with you about what's happening in your life, not to punish you, not to hurt you, but to wake you up from a place in you that is living as if it is encased in stone. Now, we're pretty happy to live kind of shut down, but our soul does not accept, the deepest part of your nature will not accept the places in you. Even if you're wide open in a certain area and way closed in another one, your soul's going to point to that area. Life's going to point you in that area. Something crazy happened to her. Here's a woman who devoted her life to other people, okay? Talk about every day waking up and helping people help themselves. She was a kind woman, a nice one. She spoke in a whisper. I mean, she had a nice presence, but she spoke like this. She was very soft-spoken, so when she came into a room, it didn't disturb anybody. And the reason she met me and I met her is because all of a sudden, out of the blue, one of her clients sues her. Now, you can understand if you see some wild therapist that have crossed the line and they're having sex with their clients and it is inappropriate. You can feel those inappropriate people coming. Here's a woman who handled her clients with kid gloves, with tenderness, with sweetness, with spirituality and honesty and integrity, and this woman is suing her, and she ends up in my office saying, I'm going to defend myself. I'm going to this tribunal with this panel of other therapists who are going to decide if my license is going to be seized. And she said, the issue is not I won't be able to do therapy anymore. She said, because you know what? I've already done 30 years of therapy. She said, but my reputation is going to be ruined. And this is so crazy that it happened because I didn't do anything wrong. And we need to remember those words, because when we land here knowing, which is why you're in these rooms and you read the books you read and you do your morning practice, the reason we meditate, we go into silence, so when we land here, we know what's going on. Otherwise, it looks like, well, why me? What a victim I am of the unfairness of this world. And that conversation that we begin to have, the why me, leads us to a dead end. It leads us to having our stony places, the places that are shut down, getting even stonier, our heart getting even harder, the brick wall we have up against life getting even thicker. That conversation doesn't work. It's not that it's wrong. It's ineffective. So when Ernest Holmes says you need to use your intelligent mind intelligently, what he's saying is, if you understand that life is always in conversation, if you enter the conversation and have that conversation help you, let it help you. So asking why me, the answer to that can't help you. Asking how is this happening for me instead of how's this happening to me, that conversation can continue, and then you can be shown what Rumi says you can see when you close both your eyes. Rumi says, the Persian poet and philosopher, he says, close both of your eyes so your other one can open. That's the eye we want open. We want the deeper eye to open so we can see what's really happening. What spell is happening in our life that has put a part of our nature to sleep? Because we sure can blame our ex-lovers and our parents and their parents and our neighbors. We can blame everything and everyone and still not understand what the task is we need to perform in order to break the spell. Because breaking the spell is what the point of the story is about. Breaking the spell, waking back up, is the point of our life in the places that perhaps we've been traumatized in our life, in our childhood, in big ways and small ways, that's put us to sleep. We too are asleep in this silence. So they're looking at the three tablets, and man, these tasks are not like, you know, go take 100 chairs out of the other room and put 100 chairs out because 100 people are going to be speaking in the room. That's a task anybody can do. This is a task that seems almost superhuman. And that's what it feels like, to wake ourselves up in areas that have been shut down. It almost feels overwhelmingly impossible for us to do. And that's the idea. It is overwhelming if we don't know how to approach that task. Right? Because to this woman, she's about to lose her license, and she doesn't even have a voice. Right? You can hardly even, she can't stand up for herself, this therapist. She doesn't have a voice. She's a meek. And, you know, and they say the meek shall inherit the earth, but don't tell her this because she is so meek, she hardly can get her voice out to speak about the injustice that's being done to her. So the first task in the story is the eldest son picks up the tablet and says, there are 1,000 pearls in the woods under the cover of moss, and you have one day in which to collect all 1,000 pearls. And if you come back at the end of the one day with 999 pearls, not 1,000, you too are going to be turned to stone. Okay, you think your lives are unfair? Put it in perspective. So he's got one day, the eldest son goes out of his house, he goes into the woods, and he starts hunting under the moss covering, and at the end of the long day, he comes back with 100 pearls. And just as the tablet foretold, he was turned to stone. Second day, the next eldest son goes out to find the pearls. He goes into the woods. At the end of the whole day, he comes back with nothing more than the eldest son did. He comes back with the 200. That's it. He's turned to stone. He was left the simple tablet. Isn't it interesting that the Tao Te Ching would call the highest level of our achievement in the world the wise child? The wise child. What did the older brother say? You're too young and too stupid. You're too young and too simple to be with us in the world. You need to be clever. You need to be smart like we are. Well, there's stone. Hello, there's stone. So the youngest son goes out. He goes out into the woods. He goes looking through the moss. And he, like, sees a pearl or two, and he recognizes in about no time that there's no way he's going to get 1,000 pearls, and his fate's going to be the same. He sits down on the ground in the woods and starts crying. Okay? Now, a lot of times we will keep ourselves from hitting that place in our life because we think we can do it. We can do it. We're like the oldest sons who figure they can handle anything. I've been around. I know how to make this work. And you know what we end up doing? We end up doing what we've always done. And we do it harder. We do it better. Want to get somebody to love you who doesn't love you? Keep working at it. Keep making them love you. And you will see that 3 years later, 5 years later, 7 years later, as I did, they don't love you anymore. In fact, they love you less. Because you will not leave them alone. They didn't love you to begin with. They're not going to love you anymore. But man, you are in it to win. Child, because the truth is not complicated. You don't have to have complex logarithmic formula to understand how the world works. You just have to be who you are in your wholeness. The older two sons figured everything out with the head. The simpleton sits down and he realizes he can't do it. There he is. is perfection. Surrender is perfection. You know what? We will do anything but surrender. We will. We'll do anything not to surrender. Because, of course, that means we failed. Nobody wants to fail. And yet, he sat down and he cried. When we stop and we cry, the 12-step program of recovery, we'll call that moment hitting bottom. You admit that the thing you're facing, you can't do alone. Some people would say, when you try and do your destiny, God's work, without God, you can't succeed. It's not possible. It is designed, these tasks, for us not to succeed at them in our old way of handling things. That's why we keep trying to do the same things we did before, and it doesn't work, and it didn't work, and it's never going to work, because we keep trying to do them in the old way. The 12-step program will call that insanity, which is continuing to do the same thing over and over and expecting different results. You're going to get the same result again, and by the time you're done doing it 100 times, you're going to be infuriated with the unfairness of the world. The simpleton sat down and recognized he could not handle this alone. It was not possible to do this alone. And the tasks we are given in our life, the things we are asked to face, are huge. They seem overwhelming. It seems like, how will I get out of this hole of depression that I'm in? How will I get past this ocean of tears I keep crying? How will I take off this 120 pounds I can't seem to move? How will I stop attracting the wrong people who hurt me over and over? It feels like finding 1,000 pearls in the woods and you can't do it. And you can't. Not the old way. It's not possible. That's why we fail. That's why we fail. That's why both brothers fail. The simpleton sat down. He hit his bottom and surrendered and recognized, I can't do this alone. I cannot do this the way I have done it before. We're going to have to do what we need to do to break the scale of what is not working in our life differently. And when he cried, something extraordinary happened in the story, and something extraordinary happens in our life, and I could march up 150 people onto the stage all with the same story. When you surrender, surrender is perfection. What does perfection mean? The Greek word of the word perfection means wholeness. It is the embodiment of what the spiritual journey is about. It's not getting from here to India so you can be Papa G's mentor. It is not that. The spiritual journey is from here, the head, to here, the heart. Inside of you, perfection means wholeness, so that the whole of you, all 1,000 pearls without one pearl missing, wholeness. Because if one pearl is missing, you aren't in your wholeness. If you're not in your wholeness, you are not able to do the task that needs to be done. The simpleton recognized that he didn't have what it took to do this task. He broke down. Some of us end up on our knees. Some of us end up at the bottom of whatever that dark place is and call somebody. Or some of us just call out and help to God. Wherever it is, you know that moment. And we all do when we reach a place where we can't take another step in the direction we're going. We can't do it. And all of a sudden, when that happened, the synchronicity that always happens, that, by the way, is not a synchronicity. It is a way of life. It is what happens 1,000 out of 1,000 times. When you surrender, what happens is the wholeness of that moment brings out the wholeness in you. And the part of you that can find those 1,000 pearls, that can come out of that depression, that knows how to attract a different kind of person, that part of you steps forward because you've called it. You've not called it out of your kindness, but out of your loneliness, out of your pain. Paul in the New Testament said that in my weakness, I am strong. Why? Because in my weakness, I know I can't do it alone. In my weakness is when I call out for help, and when I call out for help, I get the help. In my weakness am I made strong. In his weakness, the king of the ants heard his cry. The king of the ants heard his cry, and he said, because you saved me and my people, we're going to help you. And he brings with him a legion of ants, which probably looks like, you know, a little pack of ants. 5,000 ants he brings with him, and those 5,000 ants go crawling onto the walls, and each one of them finds a pearl. They find 1,000 pearls, they bring it back and put it, and they heap it in front of him as a thank you. The Tao Te Ching says, it says so many good things. It's 81 verses. It is the simplest body of sacred work that talks about how to live in this world with life instead of against it. And it says, if you're looking for something, look within. So when this woman shows up in my office, how do we help her? Do we sit down and look at the law books to see legally how she's going to do this and what other people said when they were in such a situation? We could. Do we go outside of ourselves like the older brother? They left the kingdom to seek their fortune, and they went outside the kingdom to seek it. And what did they find? They did not find their fortune. We could go looking for all the ways in which to ensure that she could have a successful trial in front of the tribunal, and we did something different. We did what the Tao suggests. If something is wrong, something is amiss, something is lacking, something is needed, turn within. Within, within is where the world's treasure has always been. Within, within. We went within. To the place of her wholeness, because no matter how encased in stone a part of your life is, we might feel, oh, my passion's here somewhere, but I can't get at it. My wisdom is here somewhere and I can't feel it. My destiny is here somewhere and I can't find it. No matter how dead it might feel inside of you, you're not dead. According to the story and according to the teaching, you might be under a spell. According to the teachings of Peter Levine, who wrote Waking the Tiger, who has spent his entire life working with trauma patients. His entire life going out into every field there is to pull back the information to understand that inside our bodies are moments that are frozen in time because of something that happened to us. And it doesn't have to be something horrible. It can just be something that surprised us, that scared us, that spooked us, that we don't have a language for. And in that moment, in the fairy tale, they'll tell you a spell was cast. In that moment, a piece of you was turned to stone. If you can go within and take the task of going to find 1,000 pearls to go after your wholeness, you will find that it's only a spell. And when you break the spell, all the energy, all the vitality, all the passion, all the power that was locked, that was frozen in there, it's back. You don't have to make it come back, it's back. It's like it's flesh frozen in time, like frozen peas, right? And you unfreeze those peas, and when you unfreeze them, they taste just like they tasted when they were fresh before you froze them. Likewise, horrible metaphor, likewise, going down inside yourself into that unconscious, watery place, down beneath what you know and what you think you know, the stories you tell yourself, or as Eckhart Tolle says, your sad stories. Down beneath a place of your sad stories. And we all have our sad stories of things that have happened to us. And she goes down to that place, and what does she remember? She has an image, a memory, a vision of something that happened to her, but she totally, totally forgot. And she remembers a moment in time when she was 15 years old and she was pregnant. She got pregnant. Name it Downside. Have your baby, but you are not ours because you're not going to shame our family this way. So you're going to go get rid of this baby and do exactly what we tell you. And she said, in that moment, she saw herself go in. She saw herself have the child. This that is asleep is not dead. We need to remember that. We might put it into hiding. We don't kill it. It's not lost. Within, go within and wake it up. Our wholeness doesn't happen by going and retrieving something from the dead. It's not dead. It is asleep as if enchanted, waiting to be unfrozen. And Peter Levine says, unfrozen comes from the sense feelings in your body. What is he saying? He's saying that when we have symptoms, they're a portal. And they're a portal to help us follow what part of us has turned stone that requires awakening. If we hate our symptoms, if we blame our symptoms, if we curse our symptoms, we miss the point. They're a portal through which we're supposed to walk so we can find out what it is we left behind so we can wake it up and move forward in our wholeness with the fullest sense of aliveness. She sees herself having the baby. She sees her baby being literally taken from her the instant it's born. She knows only that it's a girl. That's all she knows. And nurses take it off. Then she sees herself walking arm in arm. Her mom has one of her arms. Her dad has the other arm. And they're walking her, literally pushing her in the opposite direction of the hospital. They're walking through the parking lot away from the hospital where her daughter is that she doesn't want to leave. And they're pulling her. And what choice does she have? Right? She's 15. She can have her baby. She doesn't have it down into her knee. It's not like these days where kids get allowed. She can have anything. She had no choice but to follow where her parents led. And in that moment, she felt that felt sense. She felt. We feel. How do we know something's going on? We feel it. When she was 15, she didn't have the freedom or the safety to let that feeling emerge. Now, the reason the symptoms are happening in our life now is now it's safe. Now we're ready. Now we have the language. Now we have a support system. Now we have access to whatever we need safely to let out whatever symptom, which is an echo, a reflection of what's going on deep down. We have a way to get it out. And I said, what are you feeling? And all of a sudden, she felt a fist in her chest. And she said, I see myself walking in the parking lot. I see them pulling me in the direction I don't want to go. She goes, I know it's the biggest mistake I will ever make in my life. And I will never be able to forgive my parents for this. And I said, what are you feeling? She said, I'm feeling like I could just scream. And I said, scream. And she let off. She, who was a middle-aged woman, let off with a scream she'd been holding in her body for the abuse that she suffered in that moment, which was correct for the moment, but not correct anymore. She couldn't have screamed then. She needs to scream now. And that scream was no less frightening and overwhelming than a key at the bottom of a lake. That if you got into that lake and began going down to the bottom, you'd drown. That's how that scream felt. Like if she started screaming, she would drown in the anger she's carried all these years and never let out. And when the simpleton was standing by the side of the lake, the two ducks whose lives he saved from his two older brothers swam over to him and discovered there was a key at the bottom of the lake, and by God, they sure be happy to help him go get it. Down they went to the bottom of the lake, off they came with the key to the princess's bedchamber, and bingo, that was the second text. The tasks that are before us are not easy. But if we don't understand what real unemployment is in our lives, not economic unemployment, our unemployment, that life is a conversation with us about employment, our joy, our work, what we came here to do. If we don't understand it's a conversation, then we become, Ernest Holmes says, we become one amongst the law of averages. And good luck. Maybe you'll get a job because the economy's good, and maybe you won't because the economy's bad. You become a victim. And we know from weeks ago, the Course in Miracles says there's no such thing. That is a word that does not exist at the level of the soul. At the level of the soul. Not the level of personality. Close both your eyes and open your deeper eyes so you will understand the meaning of the story of unemployment for you. Because it comes with a personal message. If we don't understand that, we're just an unlucky Joe, another unlucky Jane Doe. Third tablet. Seemed easier, but it was far more difficult because it wasn't something you could do. It was something you had to guess. And guesses, as we know from Las Vegas, never end well because guesses, what is it? The house is always tipped in favor or the gambling is over. You can tell what a gambler I am. The odds are always tipped in the favor of the house, right?
Yes.
That's guessing. They said, the third tablet was, here are the three sisters of the king. They're all three princesses, and they're all beautiful, and they're all identical. They were identical. All their features identical. But the youngest one, he had to guess which one was the youngest one. And that was just a guessing game. And there was a clue in the task. The clue was that it seems like, well, how will this help me? But here was the clue anyway. The clue was just prior to this task, the oldest princess had eaten a piece of cake. Just prior to this task, the middle sister had eaten a spoonful of maple syrup on top of her ice cream. And just before this task, the youngest princess, the youngest one, had eaten a spoonful of honey just for the joy of honey. And he had to guess. When this scream came out of her, and I want to say her mouth, but the scream was not lodged in her mouth. This scream was lodged somewhere in the stony silence, put in a castle. Everybody's put to sleep, not moving, frozen in place. That woman hadn't unfrozen since the time she was 15. This scream was flash frozen, as all our screams are that we can't scream, or pains that we can't express, or feelings that we cannot or not allowed to have in childhood. They're frozen in that moment in time. And all the energy, all the aliveness, all the power, all the passion that's in them, we don't have access to. We can look for them, we can journal for them, we can go to therapy for them, but until we break the spell, we don't have access to them. They're there, but we do not have access to them. In that moment, she broke the spell of that which was frozen in time, and she spoke with a voice that in the past 30 years she'd never heard come out of her own mouth. She was now speaking with a full voice. So that when she went into the tribunal, she went in with her full voice, saying, I did nothing wrong. She was able to defend herself. And it wasn't this whole thing that life brought her, wasn't a punishment to say, oh, you, man, are you unlucky after all these years of giving, now we're going to punish you for some unknown reason because the lottery came up and you're the unlucky person who's next in the bad luck category. Life, in its genius, in its wisdom, in its infinite intelligence, there are those who call life or God infinite intelligence. Emotions, capital I, brings to us exactly the experience that we need in order to exactly break the spell that we ourselves have forgotten we cast. The moment we took energy, which is what emotion is, it's just energy in motion, and stopped it in its tracks because we couldn't release it, and then it concretized into something that's now a thing. It's now a thing. A tumor. A cyst. Some heart ailment. Whatever it is. Here it is. It's a portal. And we gotta know it for what it is, or we won't be able to use it. To go deep within to find the treasure that we are seeking. He's standing in front of the three princesses, and he's looking, and he recognizes, I still can't do this. Right? A little bee, the queen bee, whose hive he saved, comes. She goes to the first, the eldest daughter, sits on her lips for a second, to the second daughter, the princess, sits on her lips for a second, and then the queen bee alights on the lips of the youngest princess, and there she tastes the honey, and there she remains. Guessed rightly, of course. And of course he got to marry the princess. Lesbian's dream. Princess. And when her father died, he got to be king. Here was the genius of what goes on. If we thought, oh, now she has her voice and she can defend herself, that is a beautiful end of the story. That is not the end of the story. And you gotta understand this. When you enter a conversation with life, life has so much more in store for you, in store for me, in store for us than we could ever dream possible. We are willing to settle for so much less than what we deserve, so much less than what life wants to give us. It's almost pathetic, okay? I'm not saying you, I'm saying all mankind. We don't know what waits for us. What waited for her was not winning this case so that the case brought her voice out. What was waiting for her was her daughter. Because now that she had the ability to find her voice in that year, her daughter, unbeknownst to her, had been seeking her out from across the country in California, making her way to her. And I'll bet you 1,000 pearls that she couldn't have found her unless she had the felt sensation of that voice that the therapist had released, and that voice went out to her daughter. She didn't even have the first clue how to find her. That voice goes out into what the Tao Te Ching calls the net of heaven, meaning the vibration of the world through which all law works. And a million things, a zillion, squillion things can go through the net of heaven, the Tao said, and not one of them slips through. Her voice was heard across the country, and her daughter made her way back to her. "Hi," she said in the opening call. "I don't know if you're going to be happy to know who's calling, but I'm really happy to find you." And that began the relationship. That was the relationship she had been longing. She was married, she had that relationship, she had kids, she had that relationship. That wasn't the relationship her heart was breaking for. That is the intelligent wisdom, the essence of life, the gorgeous, elegant way in which life brings to us what we need, and then brings to us what we don't even know we need. And how is it done? Through the wholeness which requires us to be in our bodies, using the symptoms of what emerges, not as bad luck symbols, but as portals through which we enter and follow down to the cause of the moment that something within us went to sleep, so that we might wake it up. Husband will not wake up, our boss will not wake up, our parents will not wake up, all the people we think will wake us up and make us whole, none of them can. young son himself, we ourselves have to enter the woods, go to the bottom of the lake, guess what's right and wrong, and we can do so when we are in our wholeness. And what do the animals represent? They represent our natural, bodily, earthly selves. So that for those of us on the spiritual path who just want to love God and love God and love God and love God, that's wonderful. But it's not the whole story of where your power resides. We need to go downstairs inside of these marvelous, earthly, earthy bodies, downstairs from the attic of our mind into our bodies, and with the wholeness of our being, our human self and our divine, our spirit self and our earthly self, the part that comes from clay and the part that comes from the stars, we put them together. Then we're fully human. Then we're whole. And then we have what we need to take each day.